Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
There's a lot of things that you can't start or plan ahead for, because you don't know how it's going to go a year from now or 2 years from now. So those things are just staying in a dream basis right now. That's what DACA recipients are doing. They're dreaming about a future that's not there yet.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
Mr. Blue is dead.
Dead is diligent.
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
Come on, let's go spend some money.
And need to talk about more.
All your efforts to keep me from you are going to fail.
I'm Anna Sale.
Freddie, nice to meet you.
I met Freddie and Vanessa this fall at their apartment in northern New Jersey. It's a cozy spot on the ground floor. They met just over 2 years ago at the gym.
I saw him and he looks kind of like the coach. And I said, excuse me, are you the coach of this class? And he's like, yeah. I said, okay, well, I need to introduce myself to you. It's my first day here, so just look out for me so I don't die. Like, I've never done this.
Freddie, did you like immediately kind of notice Vanessa?
Well, I did notice the hair. She had the biggest hair in the class.
A few weeks later, when Freddie sent out a group text wishing everyone in the class a happy Thanksgiving, Vanessa responded directly to him, and they struck up an exchange.
So then we ended up meeting at Dunkin' Donuts for at 11-ish, midnight. Yeah,
so how long did we chat for, like an hour?
A couple hours, like 2 hours.
Two hours
over.
I was listening most of the time.
Like always.
Both Freddie and Vanessa are in their early 30s. Vanessa is an administrator at a university. Freddie works at a paper company and also part-time at the gym. They both grew up in New Jersey in immigrant families.
I mean, you told me you were from Mexico.
Right.
So my assumption was that it was a situation like my family. Like, you came from another country and then eventually you got residency. That was just kind of how I assumed. Because Latinos, most first generation Latinos in this area anyway, have had that experience.
Vanessa's mother is from the Dominican Republic. And growing up, Vanessa went back and forth to the DR a lot. But Freddie's only crossed one international border in his life. When he was 6, he left the small Mexican village where he was born and came to the U.S.
I remember that we were in a car. The back seat was taken off. So we lie there. They threw some blankets and covers on top of us. Basically, we were covered. We were hitting in there. And then they put the baby seats. I think it was 2 baby seats on top of us. And we drove for like maybe 2 hours or so.
Did you understand you were hiding?
I kind of understood because they told me not to make any noise, but I didn't know why or what was the purpose of that.
Vanessa didn't know any of that when things started to get serious between them. She also didn't know that Freddie is one of the 700,000 young people in the U.S. with DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and that his legal status here hinges on it. She just knew that Freddie was unlike anyone she'd ever dated.
I don't know. There was just something very honorable about him all the time. And a couple months, I would say a month into us dating, we were scheduled to meet up that day, probably again at Dunkin' Donuts, I think. And I got into a huge fight with my sister, who has mental health issues. And my sister and I were coming back from this party that my mom was hosting, and we brought plates of food, you know, for leftovers. And so in trying to, like, defend myself and manage the situation, the food was being flung everywhere.
It had been, like, a physical fight.
Right. Like, everywhere. Rice, beans, pernil, which is, like, roasted pork. It was everywhere. My glasses broke. It was a disaster. So, of course, I tell him, don't worry about it. We'll see each other tomorrow. Because, like, I have to deal with something. And he had no idea anything about my sister. And his instinct was just to come to the house and see if everything was okay. He just showed up and he said, what happened? So I just start bawling, right? I can't even say anything. And he said, you know what? He had given me a flashlight. That was the first thing he ever gave me, was a flashlight bat to protect myself walking to and from the bus stop.
A flashlight.
Yeah. It's like a titanium steel. It's like 3 feet long. So it was in my car, and he said, just hold the flashlight. He cleaned the entire car that night, and I'm intermittently going from sobbing because I'm so upset that this event has occurred to being grateful to them being embarrassed, you know, all these things. And he was just there, you know, like when he was cleaning my car, he's like, don't worry, you're not alone anymore. I got this.
When did you tell Vanessa, Freddie, that you had DACA and had previously been undocumented?
I think it was, like a month or two after. Based on how we were trusting each other or just opening up to each other, I felt comfortable. And then I figured, well, if she is going to react in another way, it'll be okay. You know, it's not going to break me. It'll just be a way for me to say she's okay or not with it. You know, so depending on her reaction, I was going to basically determine how did I stand next to her based on her view of DACA.
It came up where he said, well, I have to tell you something. And he said, I have DACA. And I was like, okay, so, like, it didn't click right away.
Did it feel like a secret you had to reveal? Like something
yes,
you needed
yes,
to?
Yes, yes. Yes, because again, will you have guessed it?
No. And I'm thinking that the process for that to turn into like legal status wasn't that difficult, because what my family had gone through, it's like, oh, this is, you can, there's a way, you can find a way. And then I remember one of the first times we went to this little Mexican restaurant that we love to go to and eat tacos and stuff. And so we were there and I said, well, you remember this thing? And I was like, I was thinking about it and we could just get married.
She proposed to me.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
And he just was silent. Like, he just looked at me and then looked down at his food and kept eating.
He didn't say anything.
I'm like, are you going to say something? You know, and then eventually he said, you know, I take marriage very seriously and I would never want to go down that path just because of legal status. And I said, well, you know, if it doesn't work out with us, then that could be like my lifetime gift to you, kind of a thing. Also a way to express my gratitude for, I'm going to start crying, for his, sorry.
It's okay.
So weird. Thanks. No, it was a way, I think, to also express my gratitude for who he was and who he was showing himself to be. I think I looked at it as like, aha, like this is an opportunity to like help him because he has it. He's so together and he's so steady and sure of himself. And so, you know, sometimes I wouldn't say it's intimidating, but it is kind of like, this is my way to like help you or give you something that maybe like matches like my, how I felt and my gratitude. Because after dealing with, you know, just regular dating for so many years, it can really make you lose your faith and like have finding like a good partner and that's a good match and all these things. And that's what motivated me to say it in the first place. And then, of course, because he's so sure of himself and solid, he says he would never just marry someone for the practical sense of it, because even if it's civil marriage, he takes it seriously. And I'm like, I can't even get you that. Like, are you? But I think also at that time, I was naive thinking that it was a quick and easy process.
Coming up, politics intervenes in Freddie and Vanessa's relationship when President Trump takes office.
Right now, with this administration, you never know where you stand. You know, so you can be good today and then tomorrow is chaos.
In case you missed it, I am pregnant with my second child. And right now, the team and I are in what we call turbo production mode to get ready for my upcoming maternity leave. While I'm out welcoming this new baby and nursing and learning how to be a family of four, the team is still going to be putting out new episodes. A lot of them are interviews done by me. And like the last time I was out on maternity leave, we also have some exciting guest hosts who will be sitting in. But for now, I have this weird, hilarious due date of December 25th. And so we thought it would be fun to make an advent calendar of sorts to count down the days until this baby comes and this phase of our turbo production mode is officially complete. So we're going to share behind-the-scenes moments with you all and some fun surprises every day until my due date. You can check it out right now at deathsexmoney.org/countdown and follow along all month long. On the next episode, a woman who was working her way up at a bank all the way to becoming a vice president but couldn't stop thinking about becoming a nun.
I started to freak out because I'm thinking, I don't fit that stereotype. A nun was like someone who's never done bad things. A nun was someone who has no personality. A nun is someone who's boring. A nun is someone who doesn't enjoy her life, right? A nun is someone who's not living her best life.
Let me tell you a good story. It was late on a Sunday afternoon, and my family and I had been away and rolled into the driveway, and everyone was worn out from traveling and getting hangry. But waiting for us was a solution. A Hungry Root box filled with healthy, grabbable snacks and a few different dinner meals to choose from. We tore into this thing like a pack of wild animals and ate all the snacks. But they were healthy, whole ingredients, fresh produce. And then we were set for dinner a few hours later, which only took about 15 minutes to prep and cook and get on the table. I was so grateful to my past self for doing my current self this solid by ordering this box. And it was easy. I took a short quiz to tell Hungry Root what kinds of meat my family eats, the sorts of flavors we like, any dietary restrictions we have, or just things we're trying to avoid, and when I wanted the box to be delivered. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. And don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking try free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM Plus to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. Freddie has had legal status in the U.S. the whole time he and Vanessa have been together. He got DACA when he was 26, not long after the Obama administration created the program for so-called Dreamers, kids who were brought to the U.S. illegally. Before that, Freddie didn't have a driver's license or a Social Security number, but he did work and pay taxes. That paper trail was useful when he was applying for DACA.
They ask you for records for your tax, at least 4 previous years, which I had, and then a lot of pay stubs, medical bills, just record that shows that you never left the country within a certain period of time. So it's a lot of paperwork because you got to show almost a weekly basis of paperwork in order to confirm that you haven't left the country. So we initiated the case, and it was very fast, actually. And I guess all my evidence was very solid. And so maybe within the next few months, I received a letter that my case was approved. And eventually, about a month or so after the fingerprinting, I got my working permit. And so the first thing I went for was for my license. Then I didn't have to get the bus for work anymore. From here to my old job is literally 10 minutes away. When I took the bus, I had to ride almost 2 hours to get the bus, because from here it's highway straight. With the bus, it was around the highway, so I had to take 2 buses.
For 5 years, Freddie didn't have to worry about that 2-hour commute both ways. He also didn't worry about getting deported until President Trump took office. Vanessa and Freddie moved into their apartment together just after Trump's inauguration. And Vanessa started to grasp what it would mean if the president made good on his threat to end DACA.
I remember we were coming back from dinner once, and I was like, you know, what happens if Trump cancels DACA tomorrow? And then everything that we've tried, that we started planning for, can't happen. If they cancel DACA and you no longer have a social or a work permit, that doesn't help us in terms of planning to buy a house or what happens if they cancel DACA and then they go after all the DACA recipients and like, we have a baby. Like, I don't want to be a single mom under those circumstances. And I remember him saying, like, I didn't think about that. And I was like, well, this is what I think about all the time. Like, what have you been thinking? And he's like, I don't know. I just thought it would work out. I'm like, okay, we have to get on the same page.
I mean, I think I wasn't giving it so much thought about it because I had been living without a working permit longer than with. Mm-hmm. So in my thought is I have done so much without it than with it, you know, so that's not going to change anything for me, you know, so that's why in my mind I thought whatever happens, it's not going to stop me, you know, and that's what she didn't understand at that moment.
Because for you, Vanessa, your partner losing legal status would be a loss. The way you have lived in America would not be possible if your partner lost legal status.
In a way, yes. I felt like there would be so much more uncertainty for how do we continue to plan for the things that we've been planning freely. You know, up until the last couple years, traveling for me has been a huge part of my life and my identity. We had agreed and we made a commitment that I won't travel outside the States until we can do so together. Mm-hmm. So that just kind of totally changes how I was thinking about like our free time or building memories kind of outside of our daily environment.
So the reality of building a life with a DACA recipient whose status might be in question slowly occurred to you, and then it became something you couldn't stop thinking about.
Right. Yeah. It was how are we going to make it work? What do we need to do to make it work? I remember being at work and every time I had free time, I would be like searching everything online. And I would try to look up different scenarios like DACA recipient, airplane travel. I was obsessive, really. I just needed to know every piece of the puzzle and how it all fit together.
Vanessa, do people at work know about the immigration process you're going through with Freddie?
No.
You're secretly Googling when you're Googling at work?
Right.
Do you feel like the fact that you're a DACA recipient is information that is best kept private?
I think it is. I don't think anybody needs to know anybody's situation in terms of legal status.
Freddie and Vanessa started talking about marriage again. They thought if they were married, it would help protect Freddie if DACA disappeared. They began planning a wedding and reached out to a judge to perform the ceremony.
We called her and we just said, hey, we're thinking of getting married, like maybe by the end of the summer. And she was like, well, if you don't have to wait, I wouldn't. I've been seeing a lot of cases get shot down in immigration court lately. So if you don't have a reason for why you're waiting another 2 months, I think it's better if you just start the process now. And then we were both kind of like, oh, shit.
And my goal was to get married maybe a few months, years down the road, just to build that relationship more solid. I felt that it was still going to keep growing.
And it was funny because I guess because no one else was part of all of these conversations, right, except the two of us. And so not everyone else fully understood. And so, like, the quickness of it was really, like, a bucket of cold water to, I think, everybody else. But our moms were on board, and so then that was enough for us. And the whole thing was very memorable, but it was surreal. And I think it took a while to feel, like, married. Not like we just kind of, like, you know, threw it together.
Where was the ceremony?
In my mom's backyard.
Freddie and Vanessa met with an immigration attorney right after that. He told them even though they're married, for Freddie to get a green card, he would need to leave the country and re-enter from Mexico legally. Normally, people who have entered the U.S. illegally have to wait 10 years before they can apply to come back in. But because of his DACA status, Freddie was eligible for something called advance parole that would allow him to leave for a short period of time and then return. But the week before he was going to submit his paperwork to travel to Mexico, the Trump administration announced it was ending DACA and advance parole for DACA recipients.
Done deal. No more.
And you hear about it in the news.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then advance parole was no more. Like, that was it. Cold turkey. Whereas the fact that DACA was being canceled, was being taken up in the courts and all of that stuff, advance parole was just not going to be a thing. So then we said, okay, back to the drawing board.
So the risk of Freddie leaving the country was a whole different thing. Like, leaving the country could mean he couldn't get back in.
No, would definitely mean at this point that he couldn't get back in.
I mean, we were in a very short period window where if the paperwork would have been submitted, we probably would have made it within maybe days or a week or so. So just that, knowing that alone, that you missed it by a few days, mm-hmm. it's like, it's almost like if you're building a house and the whole house just collapsed again and you got to start all over.
Now, there's a whole other long and complicated process Freddie and Vanessa are trying to see if Freddie can eventually apply for a green card without leaving the country for 10 years. And there's time pressure. If court challenges to preserve DACA fail, or if his DACA paperwork isn't renewed next year, Freddie could be deported. Does having to report for DACA the next time feel like it's a scarier process because of the way the politics are changing around
it? I mean, it can be. I'm not going to stress it because I can't stress the future.
How do you not stress it?
Well, there's two things to stress. Number one, if it has a solution, you shouldn't stress it. And if it has no solution, then you shouldn't stress it.
You know? Freddie, you sound like Yoda.
I try to put very minimal time to stress.
What do you do with when the uncertainty occurs to you? Like, what do you do then to work through that feeling?
So any problems that are out of my hands, I pray to God to give me the best outcome out of them. And whatever the outcome is, whether it's good or bad, once I feel like I prayed it and left it in God's hands, and that's the best that came out of it, whether it's good or bad. You know, so even if it's not a good thing at the moment, it's the best because it's going to make me stronger in the long run.
Is that how you process stress, Vanessa?
I'm trying to do that more. My first response to stress is to analyze, like, what is a way to solve this, to improve this, to fix this? And then all the behaviors that come with stress eating, stress drinking, sleeping, not wanting to work out or whatever. So I'm trying to be more centered spiritually so that things don't stress me out as much. And then we have to just let it go. You know, you can't live in that constant state of fear and stress every day.
We just got to keep moving on. Mm-hmm. And if it gets solved, then good. You know, thank God for the bed. If it doesn't, then we're always going to find a way to live around it.
That's Vanessa and Freddie. They're planning a second big wedding in a Catholic church later this month, saving for a down payment on a house, and starting to talk about kids. Since the Trump administration rescinded DACA, young people can no longer apply. But federal judges have ruled that current DACA recipients can ask for renewals. Court challenges are making their way through appeals and are expected to go before the Supreme Court. Vanessa and Freddie do have a rough plan if he's eventually deported. They'll either go live with Vanessa's extended family in the Dominican Republic or settle in Mexico, even though Freddie hasn't been there in 25 years. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. I'm based at the studios of the investigative podcast Reveal in Emeryville, California. Our team includes Katie Bishop, Annabelle Bacon, Stephanie Joyce, Joanna Solitaroff, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death Sex Money on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And you can email us anytime at deathsexmoney@wnyc.org. Since Freddie got his driver's license 5 years ago, he's owned 3 different cars. Right now, he's driving a Buick Regal. How did you pick a Buick Regal?
Well, I'm 30 years old. Spiritually, I'm like 45.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.